Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Chuck Hammond broadcasting live from the salty snack capital of the world, Hanover, Pennsylvania, the headquarters of the 401k Study Group. The show is Content That Moves the Needle, where we try to bring resources, tools, and partners to help retirement plan advisors scale and grow their practices. My guest today is Mr. Jason Grants, the Director of Institutional Retirement Plan Consulting at Unified Trust, and a frequent guest to this show whose most famous podcast is the new F word from years ago. Jason, happy summer. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. Thanks, Chuck. Thanks for having me back on.
Well, listen, it's great to have you back on in the heat of the summer. It's been a very busy few weeks for podcasts here, largely because I'm giving some of my old friends an opportunity to come on and talk about their sessions at the upcoming XL 401k conference in Las Vegas in October. And even though you won't be presenting and you're not going to go into a tremendous amount of detail, Unified will be presenting at that conference. Is that correct?
Yes. We have a session that's entitled Retirement Miscalculators, Avoiding the Pitfalls of Online Tools. It's going to be presented by our institutional retirement consultant for the Southeast, Monica Hubbard.
Wonderful. So, Jason, for the folks that don't necessarily recognize your name or the name of Unified Trust, a couple of days ago you shared a piece with me that says who we are and who we are not. And for those who don't have a background on Unified, why don't you give a little bit of information, and then we're going to jump into a couple of items that you've been recently published on in some trade journals. So I'd like to get in and get some feeling on those for you. So give the who you are, but especially give the who you are not about Unified Trust, if you don't mind.
Sure. Well, who we are, first and foremost, we're an organization that puts participants first. So when you know, plan sponsors or advisors who recommend plan sponsors to us do so, they're doing so because, you know, they, A, want to get maximum fiduciary protection for their client or for themselves, if they're a plan sponsor, and B, because they want to get the best possible outcome for their participants, for their employees. And when advisors are looking at us, they're looking for a vendor that's going to separate them from the more common, what I would view as a more commoditized vendors that are out in the market. And we do a couple of things for the employer and for the participants that separate them. And then when we're working with advisors, because of the nature of the way we operate as a discretionary trustee, a large part of the heavy lifting that goes into running plans lifts off of the shoulders of not just the employer, but also the advisor, who might be doing a lot of work behind the scenes that plan sponsors don't always know is being done, is being subcontracted to us. So who we are is we're an organization that puts participants first. We maximize fiduciary protection for the employer. We maximize the result for the participant, and we do it in a way that allows the advisor to be scalable. What we're not is we're not a mutual fund company. We're not an insurance company. We don't sell products. We provide services. We're not a proprietary investment shop. We're not a pay-to-play organization. We don't have any alliances. We're completely independent. We are a fiduciary for 100% of our clients, so we're never a non-fiduciary or some sort of pseudo-fiduciary or co-fiduciary. And we've never accepted any sort of soft dollars, revenue share payments, or failed to follow a quarterly fiduciary monitoring process. So we're a purist organization that's independent, that is always doing the right thing for all of our customers, which include the participants, the employers, and the advisors.
Jason, thanks for sharing that with me. I always, you know, pick up something new, despite the length of time that I've been familiar with Unified. And I think one of the things that's most interesting is that, you know, I was having a conversation a couple of days ago with an advisor in Ohio who has 300 retirement plans. And they do a lot of things that most retirement plan-centric / fiduciary-focused advisors do. And my question to him was, how are you going to grow your plan practice if you don't outsource some of it? And he really didn't have an answer for that. You know, they're part of their value proposition is doing a lot of the things that most fiduciary-focused advisors do. Maybe they're the 338, maybe they're doing some participant-level things. But you mentioned scale, and that's what really we're here to talk about when we do these podcasts. So I think it's interesting. Do you have these similar conversations with advisors who have larger blocks of business? Do you think that at some point in time they struggle with how they're going to grow? Listen, bringing on 25 or 30 new plans a year is great, but they're doing it the same way they used to do it. Hand-to-hand combat, one at a time, taking on all the work, all of the duties, all of the meetings. Is that a conversation that comes up a lot when you talk to the advisors who might not be as familiar with Unified as I am?
Yes. I would say that that comes up in virtually every new – every time I meet a new advisor, is sort of the old question of, all right, you're doing all this, you know, what's left for me to do, or I'm used to doing a lot of that work, now I'm asking you to do it. And the answer always comes back to scale. Does the ability, you know, does working with a unified trust allow the advisor to take on more plans without adding internal resources than working with other providers? Or another way to look at it is, will they get better results for their clients when working with us than when working with another vendor for the same number of hours spent on a plan? And either way, it's a question of what is the desired goal for the advisor? You know, is the advisor interested in outcomes? Is the advisor mostly plan-level service and not really participant-facing? So these are the kinds of questions we're always probing with advisors when we meet with them is, you know, are you working with just the plan committee? Do you have staff that does a lot of the day-to-day legwork that's needed in order to manage a relationship and make sure the plan runs right? When we get to the notion of scalability, I always ask the advisor, you know, what do you want to be? What do you want your company to be when it gets to that point? Do you want your company to continue to be a boutique where you have a limited number of high quality clients that you can provide good service to without adding resources, or do you want to eventually grow your business to become an enterprise? And becoming an enterprise, it means building infrastructure, it means hiring employees, it means adding benefit costs, it means training those employees. And if you're going to get to that point where you're now at the crossroads of what you want to do with your business, one viable way to go is to go the outsourcing route. And instead of insourcing to a junior staff member that now needs to be trained and managed and paid for, how about outsourcing to a company that is professional, that's been doing it for 30 some odd years, has a proven track record, has a process that is effectively guaranteed to be an executed prudent process and can demonstrate maximum fiduciary protection for your employer and maximum participant outcomes for those employees, that's a decision that every advisor is going to have to come to. And when they think about it from that perspective of either way, I'm outsourcing it, I'm just either outsourcing it to an external company that's professional, or I'm outsourcing it to a junior staffer who I now have to train, pay for, and manage. Either way, they're making the same choice. It's just a matter of how they want to do it.
Jason, I love the boutique to the enterprise. That is very well articulated, and that is, in fact, truly one of the issues that aspiring advisors get to when they move into that intentional area. When they're at 25 or 30 plans, there's a lot they can juggle on their own, but in order to move into that intentional, they've got to make a decision. Do they want to hire more people, or do they want to bring on more technology or some combination thereof? And in either case, they both take time, they both take money, and they both take supervision, training, and implementation. So I really like that phrase. And most businesses, whether they're small, medium, or large, do some sort of outsourcing, whether it's payroll, sanitation, janitorial, accounting. They're outsourcing part of it. And for an advisor not to consider that, not to consider how they're going to take that leap to become an enterprise, I think they're really doing not just themselves an injustice, but also their clients. So you've been quoted quite frequently lately in the industry trade magazines, and one of the articles you were quoted in was on benchmarking of managed accounts. So what was the impetus for that article, and what do you, if advisors haven't read it, what would you like them to take away from that article?
This was an article that was published a couple of weeks ago, or I should say last week, in Plan Advisor magazine. The author, Lee Barney, came to us and just asked us one question, which was, can managed accounts be benchmarked? And when I hopped on the phone with her, that was the only question she had, and then my answers led her to a few others. And the answer I gave her was yes. You know, I believe that managed accounts have different mechanisms or different ways that they can be benchmarked. However, the mistake is trying to benchmark them in the same way you might benchmark a mutual fund, which is effectively a packaged product. What people need to understand about managed accounts is they are custom solutions that are services in nature. So benchmarking a service where there is no uniformity of that service within the industry, using a traditional method such as an index, would be inappropriate. And what I said to her was, what you really need to be doing is looking at the managed account from the perspective of goal achievement. What is the managed account service trying to achieve? Is that in line with the goal of the end user, which in this case in a managed account would be a participant in a retirement plan? And then what is the beginning point? And then where are you today and what is the end goal? So, for example, if I apply a managed account service to a participant and when we do the measurement, the stated goal of the participant is to replace 70% or more of their pre-retirement income at retirement, and today they are on track for 45% income replacement, well, we now have a stated goal, which is to make up that gap, which is 25% gap. We can now measure the progress of the managed account for efficacy year over year, and if that 45 is getting closer and closer and closer to 70 or achieves it, then we know that the service is in fact working. And I think that that's an appropriate way to benchmark the efficacy of a managed account, is how is it doing versus the goal. You can still do the benchmarking of the underlying components. For example, in a managed account are mutual funds. And if one of those mutual funds happens to be a large cap growth fund, it would be appropriate to benchmark that large cap growth fund against a large cap growth index. But the managed account itself needs to be measured versus whether or not it's actually achieving what it's supposed to achieve.
So what's interesting about that is Unified can do that work. They're good questions to be asked. It's sort of a riddle and also a sales tool where a lot of advisors will say, hey, you know, we have this managed account. We have our own proprietary formula. We have our own proprietary setup. But if you're in a competitive situation and that's the case, I don't necessarily always know if advisors have the technological horsepower nor the time to be able to do that due diligence. So trying to roll this into the recurring theme of scalability and outsourcing, when you need to have heavy lifting done and you don't have the people or the technology, you need to have a solid partner who can help you do that. And when you sort of let go of some of those old duties, you will find a lot of liberation, and you will find you can spend time doing the things that you like. We don't like doing investment analysis, so we want to outsource that. We want somebody else to handle the plan level stuff, and we want to get in there and try to make an impact with retirement readiness and explaining the benefit to plan participants, as opposed to worrying about what percentile or decile all of the funds are in. That's just not fun for us. So thank you for highlighting that. Another article, which was also in 401k Specialist magazine, was surrounding how can advisors effectively use 316 services as a tool. And I personally think that the capital P, capital A, the name plant administrator, and the whole issue around 316 services is not only cumbersome for advisors because there's a lot of stuff you've got to dispel, but it's also really around trying to communicate those moving parts to, in effect, the plan sponsor, the business owner, who has, in fact, said, hey, I can do all of this stuff myself, when they don't necessarily realize that the people that they think are doing each of these parts probably aren't doing them the way they think they're being done, and a lot of that final responsibility falls back on the shoulders of the plan sponsor. So, Jason, not to steal the thunder from the article, but if folks haven't read it, how can an advisor effectively offer 316 services?
Well, I think the thing about 316 services, first and foremost, is actually understanding what services are out there, because there's probably 100 different versions of what has been broadly headlined as 316 services. At the top of that list would be truly working with someone else who would become a named plan administrator and remove the client from that role. And then it goes all the way down to just component services that would be associated with the role of a plan administrator that are being taken on by a provider. I mean, ultimately, if you're looking at retirement plans and you're trying to look at what matters most regarding them, you know, I would say at the top of my list would be, you know, the participant outcome would be the most important thing. But aside from that, it's ensuring that the plan runs smoothly and that the plan follows the plan governing plan document and stays in compliance with ERISA. When looking at providers, broadly asking a question of will you be a 316 is probably a question that most providers today could say yes to, because they have somewhere in their litany of services at least one service that would be called a 316 service. So I don't know that that's the question that needs to be asked, which is one that we get often asked when we're working with advisors, is will you be a 316? Really, it should be what 316 role do you play and what services are covered under that arrangement? Because, you know, there's a litany of things that are required to be done by a plan administrator. Signing the 5500, performing the non-discrimination testing, taking discretion over loans or ordinary distributions, adjudicating a hardship withdrawal, or working with determining if the qualification status of a domestic relations order, or even just basic stuff of sending in the payroll contributions on a timely manner, or interpreting general plan document provisions. There's a million of these things. And the question then becomes to the provider, A, are you willing to sign on as a fiduciary, either in a broad way because you're like a unified trust where you're a named fiduciary under 402A signing on as a discretionary trustee, or in a broad way where you're named in plan document as the governing plan administrator, or if not in a broad way, in some limited purpose way where you're providing some suite of fiduciary services, and specifically which ones are you providing. And as an advisor, when they're starting to evaluate a marketplace where increasingly the standard services have become commoditized, daily valid record keeping, 800 number service, quality internet site for the participant, quality internet site for the plan sponsor, access to high quality institutionally low priced investments, you can virtually find that in everyone's retirement plan today. What's going to start separating the really good quality providers from the ones that are more mediocre or really just commoditized is to what degree they're providing value-add services that are going to help the plan run smoother, stay in compliance, follow the governing plan document, follow ERISA, and improve the outcomes for the participants. Managed account services, like we were just talking about, are one way to get the improved outcomes. Incorporating a suite of 316 services in would be a way to get the plan to run smoother. Because ultimately, Chuck, the one way we can ensure that the plan runs right is by running the plan instead of relying on a plan administrator who works for a widget maker who is running the plan along with 30 or 40 other tasks that they have on their desk as part of their catch-all benefits job.
So I read somewhere recently that the top five reasons for voluntary correction were all administrative functions. They weren't investments. They weren't the process around investments. They weren't about fees. They were operational breakdowns of the plan, such as some of the things you mentioned. Not having a signed plan document, not following the signed plan document, not distributing notices in a timely fashion, payroll remittance. Those are all things that when you are making the donuts, like we like to say here, you know, the old Dunkin' Donuts commercial, when you're out making the donuts, running your business, doing your marketing, doing all of your stuff, there are times when things fall through the cracks. And if the top five reasons for voluntary correction with the IRS all have to do with the operations side of the plan, not the investment side of the plan, then it benefits not only the plan sponsor to consider these services and to ask the right questions, as you stated previously. Can you do it? What roles and functions do you play? And will you sign a document that says you will take fiduciary responsibility? So not only is it good for the plan sponsor, the employer, it's also good for the advisor. If you can clearly articulate what the plan sponsor needs and how they may benefit from having, in some shape or form, outsourced duties, you're actually saving the plan sponsor money, and you are making sure that at the end of the day, the participants are taken care of, because that's who the plan is for. So I think that, you know, both the boutique to the enterprise and those three statements around 316 services are exceptionally clear and focused, and advisors should use them when they are having these conversations with either existing plan sponsor clients or potential new plan sponsor clients. So, Jason, you know, we're right up on the time, 22 minutes. It was kind of a little bit of a grab bag, but you've been making the rounds and being interviewed and asking questions and being a really good advocate for advisors and plan sponsors over not just your career, but especially over the last few months. If people want to get a hold of you, I know your team has grown. You've added some new folks to go out and help advisors grow and scale their practices. But what's the best way if an advisor, after they finish listening to this, want to learn more about how you can help them grow and scale? What's the best way for them to get a hold of someone or you at Unified?
Well, have them call me, Chuck. They can reach me at area code 732-227-9252, or they can reach me on email at jason.grants@unifiedtrust.com, and that's jason.grants@unifiedtrust.com. Again, the phone number is 732-227-9252. Regardless of where they are geographically located, I'm happy to have that conversation with them, teach them about what we do, how we operate culturally, how we can help them, in growing their practice or becoming more scalable or providing better value-add services to their clients. And if they happen to be in an area covered by someone else at my firm, I'm happy to make that introduction when it's appropriate.
Excellent. So, Jason, thank you very much for being on today. I really do appreciate it. And
my pleasure, Chuck, as always.
Yeah, and if you're going to be at the XL conference, make it a point to run into someone from Unified. If you don't know someone from Unified and you know me, then come up to me and I will walk you to somebody at Unified. They're a solid resource that can help you scale and grow your practice. They are top-notch at ERISA, and they're out there every day trying to make advisors' lives easier, their practices more scalable, but most importantly, they're there to put the participant first. So, Jason, thank you for being on today. I know you're not going to be out in Las Vegas this year, but I will make sure that anybody that needs to find somebody from your organization will be able to do so. So thank you very much for being on, and have a wonderful rest of your week.
Yes, thanks for having me on, Chuck, and you have a great summer, rest of your summer as well.
Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.